Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting to you live today from the top level of the Criswell Center at the First Baptist Church of Dallas, Texas. It's a phenomenally beautiful day here in Dallas, and we've got a spectacular view as we're looking out here at the Metroplex of Dallas, Texas, from one of America's most historic churches. We're very thankful for the First Baptist Church of Dallas, Texas, to be host to us today. We're going to be having a fascinating conversation on this program about something that really gives us a clue in terms of what's happening in American life. You know, there are a lot of things you could look at. You could look at entertainment habits. You could look at sporting habits. You could look at eating habits. Well, that's kind of the one we're looking at today. But it's more about architecture. The fact is that more and more houses are being built without something that in previous generations folks thought a house ought to have. And that is a dining room. And we're going to be looking at a report that indicates that the dining room is going the way of the dinosaur as architects are doing what basically Americans say they want, which is to create, and I love this word, grazing spaces. The term grazing spaces is new to me, but that's what they're saying that a lot of families really want because they no longer even aspire to sit down to a meal together. Not even in the kitchen, not even a nook with the table and chairs. Just grazing space, because members of the family at different times and in their own ways with different dietary habits, with no common meal, no common menu, no common expectations, no common time, just a sashay through the grazing space, get what they want, and then go on with the rest of their lives. We're going to be talking about what our houses say about ourselves, and we're going to be looking at some other statistics as well, including the fact that the average home right now for a family is about three times the size of that same home 50 years ago. So our expectations are changing in a lot of ways. Let's look at some of the issues in the news. Obviously, one of the big things facing us this week is Super Tuesday, about half of the American population voting in primaries in both the Republican and Democratic parties tomorrow. And so by the time we have the election results in tomorrow night, in all likelihood, we're going to know, number one, if we have a nominee presumptive in each of the two parties, and if so, who that nominee is likely to be. Now, as you're thinking about all this, realize that the polls are showing a tightening of the race on the Democratic side. It's very interesting to see that if you are a Democrat right now, in terms of Democratic leadership, the state that seems to be most important to you is California. And with Barack Obama closing Hillary Clinton's previously seemingly invincible lead, it looks like the state of California may have an inordinate influence this year in the Democratic nomination process. Now, if you are a Republican, the state that apparently has the greatest interest is Missouri, because Missouri seems to be a profile of the American electorate, especially in the Republican Party, and so there are an awful lot of people looking to Missouri to say whoever wins Missouri is likely to come out of top on the Republican side and face the likely Democratic challenger. Now, what makes all this very interesting is, of course, that on the Republican side, you're down to two major candidates vying for the kind of momentum that would lead them out of Super Tuesday. But here again, even as on the Democratic side, it looks like that the lead that had previously been held by Hillary Rodham Clinton, the senator from New York, has been narrowing. On the Republican side, it looks like Senator John McCain of Arizona may be widening his lead. So we'll be watching that with you, and a lot of results coming in tomorrow night. Let's not prejudge the results, but those of you who are in Super Tuesday states have a real opportunity to make a huge statement tomorrow, because in some previous nomination races, it's all been over even before Super Tuesday. There has been such momentum for one candidate that in all likelihood, we knew who the nominee was going to be. Not so this year. There are signs that McCain has taken a sizable lead on the Republican side. We'll see tomorrow. But there's every sign that on the Democratic side is up for grabs. And it'll be interesting to watch that together. I want to suggest to you something that, as an intelligent Christian, you want to keep in mind as you're thinking about news media coverage on these events. Because I hear an awful lot of frustration, and I share so much of that frustration, superficial news coverage. if you watch the network news broadcast, if you watch the cable news networks, you see the same thing over and over again, and oftentimes in the most superficial way. I want to suggest to you three antidotes for that. The three antidotes are all on Sunday morning, and that's why I'm raising the issue, because my wholesome guess is that most of us listening to this program today simply are not available in front of the television on Sunday morning. I hope you're not. I hope you're in church. So that means you're going to be missing the three most important news programs of the week. Those are Face the Nation, which is CBS, Meet the Press, which is NBC, and This Week, which is ABC. All three are very high-quality news broadcasts. All three have substantial, very direct, very thorough conversations with the leading newsmakers. And all three of them feature the very top of the news media in terms of the interview process. Now, I just suggested that you're not likely to be where you can watch them on Sunday morning or early on Sunday afternoon. Let me suggest how you can make up for that. Just go and get their podcast. That's one of the things I do after the weekend. If you go and register for the podcast, you can do it, of course, through iTunes or whatever is your podcasting software, and you make them refresh right after the program, you're going to discover that by the end of the day Sunday, you will have all three of them refreshed. You're also going to discover something else, that you can listen to all three in their podcast version in just a little over an hour. And if you will have that playing while you're doing something else, maybe while you're working in the kitchen, while you're working in your office, while you're in your car, while you're jogging, it can be a very good way to catch up on the news of the day. Now, speaking of the news, there's some interesting things from over the weekend. Julia Silverman, reporting in the Boston Globe, says that hundreds of college and university professors held a green teach-in this past Thursday. Now, for those of you who are not flower children of the 60s, a teach-in is when faculty members say, we're not going to be talking about whatever the class and curriculum calls for today. Instead, we're going to have something like a teach-in, a sit-in, and we're going to have a special consciousness-raising session on something. In this case, it's about global warming. Now, listen to this. The story, by the way, is grounded in an Associated Press report located from Portland, Oregon. It says this: global warming issues took over lecture halls and colleges across the country Thursday, with more than 1,500 universities participating in what was billed as the nation's largest ever teach-in. Organizers said the goal of the event, dubbed Focus the Nation, was to move past preaching to the green choir, that is, speaking only to those who are already convinced of global warming, to reach a captive audience of students in many fields who might not otherwise tune into climate change issues. Now, to stop right there after just a couple of sentences in the story, if you think that America's college and university students are the people that don't know about global warming, then you haven't visited a campus lately. But anyway, it says this: faculty members from a wide spectrum of disciplines, from chemistry to costume design, don't you wish you had that, professor, agreed to incorporate climate change issues into their lectures on Thursday. Now, how you do that with costume design, I have no idea, but that's up to that professor. Community colleges and some high schools also took part. Now, this is the kind of thing that I find really, really fun. What kind of examples do you have here of what they're doing in order to reach past the choir? Well, the University of Kentucky and Glendale Community College in Arizona began serving, and this is in quotation marks, low-carbon meals all week. Now, folks, I know what a low-cholesterol meal is. I know what a low-calorie meal is. I even have a knowledge of what a low-fat meal might be. But a low-carbon meal? I have no idea what that is. It'll be very interesting to find out. My guess is it's not much about anything, just except feel good, which is exactly what they said this isn't about, preaching to the choir. This is the ultimate preaching to the choir. We're told here that organizers at New York's Fordham University put up a mock wind farm to show people that solutions are close at hand. End quote, a mock wind farm. Let me just remind you that the people who call for wind farms are the people who will not have them in their own backyard. This is what's really fascinating. Just try to put up a wind farm. I've been in California. I've seen them, and they obviously produce some electricity. So let's go for it. Just watch what happens when you suggest it. You'll watch the ecologists knock each other out, with one saying that it's a blight upon the environment to have them, and others saying we need them for energy. I don't know what in the world comes out of the teach-in other than news reports like this, but it is a sign of what's going on in this country even now. Speaking of what's going on, no doubt many of you heard about the suicide bombers who brought mass murder Friday to two pet bazaars in Iraq, in this case in Baghdad. The blast came 20 minutes apart in different parts of the city, but it was apparent that Al-Qaeda in Iraq was behind this. But here's the bottom line. It looks like they used two mentally retarded women strapped with remote control explosives as the suicide bombers. Now, what makes that very interesting is, of course, that when you're using someone you know is mentally impaired in this way, you really can't even plausibly claim that they're suicide bombers. This just adds two more murders to Al-Qaeda's intent to bring terror and disruption to Iraq. It's another reminder of what we're up against in terms of the clash of worldviews. What vision of human dignity must you have to send mentally retarded women as suicide bombers into a place of business like a pet bazaar to kill as many people as possible? Just a reminder of what the clash of worldviews can really look like. We'll be back to talk about what our houses say about us on the Albert Mueller Program. This is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. From Dallas, Texas, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Our houses do say something about us. As a matter of fact, architecture says a great deal about us. You can just look at the history of architecture and see how lifestyles, expectations, and worldviews have changed. Just during the 20th century, there was an enormous shift from Victorian and classical architecture at the beginning of the century into Bauhaus and modernist architecture. You had the rise of skyscrapers and then the minimalism that certainly marked so much going on. Frank Lloyd Wright and his attempt at an organic architecture. And then by the end of the 20th century, we were big into postmodern architecture, which basically meant you take whatever you like from previous styles and put it all together and claim it to be postmodern. But now one of the things we're noticing is that houses are very different. And if you're driving around any community of any size, you're going to notice there are some huge homes that are being built. And the average house actually would look pretty huge to someone from the post-war era. Now, just think about the average city. You think about where you are. Think about the suburbs that were built during World War II, or especially after World War II, the big baby boom and the housing boom that came when all the soldiers came back from World War II. And what are you looking at? You're looking largely at bungalows, large first floor, slightly smaller second floor. You're looking at probably two bedrooms, one bathroom, a dining room, kitchen, family room, and maybe a couple of little extra nooks and crannies, and that was about it. And in that home, families raised, parents raised fairly large families. I mean, you're talking about two, three, four, five kids. The idea of having your own room for a kid was a very unusual thing. That generally meant you didn't have any brothers or sisters. And then you move into the 50s and the 60s, and you have the development of the larger suburban ranch home. And as land prices fell and the suburbs allowed for larger lots, you had the ranch house that was developed, saving cost instead of two stories, putting it all into one, spreading it out so that you had now three bedrooms, maybe one and a half bath, two baths. And maybe you added a family room to the living room, but you still had the dining room. You still had the kitchen. All that was just considered normal. You went from a carport to a garage as homes were developed and got larger. Well, during the period from 1945 to 2005, the average American family home that is inhabited by parents with children increased between two and three times in size. And that just leads to expectations. Kids expect their own rooms. Parents expect to have different kinds of space. We have rooms in some houses that previous generations didn't even have names for, like keeping rooms and things like this, which are now just a part of architectural parlance. Well, there's a very interesting report out that tells us something about how our families are different, or at least how we live family life differently. You'll see reports in the United States and reports in Great Britain saying the same thing. And that is that the fastest disappearing room in houses being built right now is the dining room or any common eating space, but especially the formal dining room. I'm going to read to you a report here from the Telegraph. It says this. It says, times have changed, and no one shows off about their dining rooms anymore. Dining rooms were for hostess trolleys and hot plates and souffles. They required a huge amount of effort. If you have a dining room, you can't serve the carrots out of the saucepan. Now, that's just very interesting. That's just one little angle. I think this is a very perceptive story. It goes on to say, you have to put them in a serving dish, that is, the carrots. Even the ice cream has to be decanted, and along with the rest of the food, either has to be trundled along a corridor or dispatched through a hatch in the wall. The washing up involved in having a dining room is horrendous. Most are also filled with silver, which means several hours a week polishing the candelabra and the cutlery. You must have serious cutlery as well as a proper dining service. Then there are the curtains to think about and formal chairs. You have to dress the part, too, because it just doesn't make sense to wear pajamas sitting in the dining room. That's as out of place as a milk carton at the dining room table. Now, this is what the report goes on to say. It's easy to see why the dining room has gone the way of trifles and Christmas pudding. It requires too much perspiration. Far easier to knock the kitchen and the dining room into one huge space and let the children use it for a game room and a grazing ground. Now, that's pretty much what's going on. And as a matter of fact, all you have to do is think about the houses that you're seeing being built. Think about the houses you may have visited. How many of them have anything like a formal dining room? Or if any just common dining area, how often do today's families actually expect you're going to sit down and eat together? Interesting here. In Great Britain, for instance, over 500,000 dining rooms have been demolished in the past year. In other words, people are actually taking homes, older homes have dining rooms, and they're getting rid of them, turning them into something else. Now, here's something. Dining rooms in many homes are becoming home offices, 40% since the year 2000, and a huge drop, of course, in dining room furniture sales. Now, when you start thinking about all of this, you realize that this architectural change says something about us. On this program before, we've talked about the importance of a family meal, of the opportunity for a family to share an actual meal. And even if it can't happen every day because of travel and other things, the average day expectation should be, and I'm going to argue this very strongly, should be that the family spends time together eating at a meal. Hopefully, you recover the idea that at least a good portion of these meals should be prepared in the house and should be enjoyed by the family. And I just want to say a word of appreciation for my wife. This is a major concern for her as wife and mom. I mean, she makes wonderful meals, and with repeated frequency, we eat them in a more formal way than many families would ever understand. And we've got all the things they make fun of in this article, right down to candelabras and all the rest. But I don't want to act artificially here. It's not like every night we, you know, want to sit at the table like the Howells from Gilligan's Island with the silver service and all the rest. The point is the timing. The point is that you are together. And the point is that the meal is made something other than grazing, and the house is something other than just a place for grazing ground. There's just something wrong when a family's life can be reduced to no need for any space to eat together, because you've abandoned the expectation of eating together. Now, I want to point out something else, too. Hospitality has been a very, very important part of the biblical worldview, going back to Israel and also in the church. The ministry of hospitality has been very important. You know, it's difficult these days to be invited over to someone's house for dinner, because especially in houses where there's no place to sit down and eat together, what do you have to do? You have to go out together now. So someone else is preparing the food. You're losing the sense of hospitality with someone actually lovingly preparing the food, serving the food. You're losing the experience even of cooking together and cleaning up together. You're losing the rather leisurely experience of having conversation at a table. Now, here's something that I want to point out about the whole issue of the family meal. Many of these articles and reports coming about the architecture also acknowledge another change in family life, and that is that there is no expectation that a child will have to involve him or herself in a conversation about anything other than him or herself. Now, that's really, really important. Think about this, parents. One of the added bonuses of a family dining time, whether, frankly, it's in a dining room or just around a common table in the kitchen, is that parents can call upon children to talk about things they otherwise wouldn't talk about, such as Super Tuesday and the primaries tomorrow, such as what's going on in their school, such as what they think about everything from the situation in Chad to, well, the situation in their neighborhood. When you don't have the time where you're sitting down at some leisure, where parents can point to a kid and say, what do you think about this? Now get this, the only conversations many parents have with their kids are about the kids. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. I'd love to know what you're thinking about this. There are an awful lot of intelligent Christian parents out there and others who are observing the scene. To join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. This week, as last week, the first two on-air callers will receive a free copy of my new book, Culture Shift. We'll be back with your calls in just a moment. The number 877-893-8255. Live from Dallas, Texas, this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. The Albert Mueller Program.
Listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Let me remind you that it is a toll-free call. That's 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I say that because we get an awful lot of callers on cell phones, and the calls get dropped before we can ever get you on the air. So just remember that if you have the opportunity, give us a call on a wired phone, and we probably have a better chance of keeping you online until we can get you on the air. We got a call coming in. You can join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. From St. Matthews, Kentucky, Cynthia is calling, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Cynthia.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I just wanted to say you are so right that definitely the dining room table is the place where we need to have our family conversations, and it is dying. I've been to other people's homes where, you know, they aren't communicating together. They've done away with their dining room, as you say.
Now, let me ask you, have you talked about this maybe with other parents? Do you hear anyone talking about this and what it might mean about family life?
No, I mean, our family, we talk about it a lot because that's the time when we communicate about what's gone on in our day or, as you were saying earlier, you know, in the political arena.
Yeah, well, I think that's really important, Cynthia, and keep it up. I know St. Matthews, Kentucky, and, you know, one of the first things I think about are all those streets with those homes, many of them, as a matter of fact, built during that era we were talking about right after the war, and those very charming bungalows and homes, and almost every one of them has a formal dining room. Because if the family knew anything about what it needed a place to eat together. And I'm so thankful your family's still doing that. I appreciate your call. You'll be getting a copy of my book, Culture Shift. Just stay on the line, and the screener will get the information from you there. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You know, a lot of things about our homes tell the story about us. The art on the wall, the furniture. Of course, even the placement of the furniture. And the kind of furniture that that we're buying. For instance, another one of the trends that is very observable in the marketplace is the trend towards giant viewing areas where you're actually taking very expensive to build units of the house, large rooms, and you're configuring the entire room as something of a television studio or more like a movie theater. And so you're looking at an incredible amount of space dedicated to entertainment. And guess what? An awful lot of meals are eaten in those spaces. So you now have these giant sofas being produced with eating, you know, areas built into the furniture. Cup holders not only in our cars now, but in some of the furniture you see advertised and sold in furniture stores as well. Join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255 from Alexandria, Minnesota. Brenda's on the line listening on XM170. Go ahead, Brenda.
Yeah, I was just going to comment about eating around the table. I noticed as a teacher, I start with current events every day, and I've noticed so many students don't know what's going on in the world at all. And I think that that's one of the things that we've lost is that, you know, eating around the table. I remember eating around the table with my parents and them talking about politics and news and those things. And I think that it's just kind of gone by the wayside.
You know, Brenda, I think you're right. And looking back at the experience as a kid, you know, sitting at the dining room table eating, I don't think we realized all that was going on. You know, it was just the normal thing that families did. And it certainly wasn't strange because it was going on at so many other houses. I can remember when I was in my teenage years, next door neighbor's house, it was an Italian family that the meal was such a huge event. That's one of the ethnic things that I noticed. And it was a wonderful thing about that family. The entire family was involved in that meal. looking forward to that meal and, you know, sitting around the table. There are loud tables and quiet tables. There are formal tables and informal tables. There are, you know, chatty tables and less chatty tables. But it really matters that the family sits around the table and talks. Brenda, I do appreciate your call. Join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We've got time for your call, and that's another reminder that it does take time for a conversation. That's why a meal is an important thing. Not grazing ground. Not with the children like a herd, just coming through on their own through the kitchen, grabbing of this and grabbing of that. Now, one of the other things that's really interesting is there's also the loss of the family menu. And so one of the things is, remember this, parents, write this down, notice it. An awful lot of parents now talk with their kids only about the kids. And an awful lot of kids only eat what they want to eat because the parents, they're acting like the menu board at McDonald's. Rather than saying, hey, you're going to eat this whether you like it, and you'll learn to like it or not. It doesn't matter. You're going to eat it anyway because it's good for you. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Are our families disappearing along with the dining room? Good conversation to come on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. This has been a fascinating conversation, and to join it, just call us at 877-893-8255. Let's go to Hillsboro, Ohio, where Suzanne's on the line. Go ahead, Suzanne.
Yes, I enjoy your program so much, and I just wanted to comment on the idea that you're talking about this evening. There was a time when I entertained in my dining room, and then everyone seemed to start working, and I decided I could go to work too, and that's when I stopped using my dining room because I was just too tired to deal with the silver, polishing silver, and the china. And I've watched my daughters now with their life, and they're working women. And they are just exhausted, too exhausted to think about entertaining and taking care of a dining room. And I think, too, when you talk about the entertainment rooms, that's a place where they can just unwind and forget about the working world. And I'm not condoning it. Don't misunderstand me. I think it is something that is very lacking in our society now,
yeah.
The way we're raising our children and the lack of conversation. We certainly had that part of it in our home when the children were growing up. But I do understand to some extent what pressures the younger women and are, you know, up against. They're working, they're tired, they don't have time for the lifestyle that I had when I was a young woman raising a family.
Now, Suzanne, a very articulate point you've made there, and I think a very important one. And I think it's also important for us to say, raising an issue like this is not to say that we're railing against an architectural trend in and of itself, but rather maybe today's conversation can help some parents, families to say, you know, we're missing something and we'd like to recapture some of that. That's actually my hope in this conversation. And I think you have really pinpointed a lot of the reasons why this happened, from working to, that is, the mom working. You mentioned even the kids working. There are a lot of things that pull people like centrifugal force away from the family and away from the dining room table, away from the kitchen table for that matter, or any common table. And I hope maybe this conversation just encourages some parents to say, you know, we really have lost something, but we don't have to keep it lost, leave it lost. We can regain at least some of this. No one is suggesting that we're going to be returning to an uncomplicated lifestyle. I think that's probably not very practical for most families. But I think we can make them more uncomplicated than they now are. And certainly by saying we're going to set a priority, a stack pole in this family's life, at least at these times, you know, mark it down. Mom, dad, every kid, mark down. We're going to be in one room at one time on these times, non-negotiably. And, I mean, things happen, so just get it back on track. But make sure something happens there. Suzanne, really do appreciate your call. Let's go to Karen calling from Pittsburgh, Michigan, listening on XM 170. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. Enjoy your ministry. Thank you. One of the things that I've noticed as I do training with younger folks at our church is without that bond that we all had when we were growing up, it seems as though younger folks maybe have lost the ability to have a real conversation. They're, you know, they speak in sound bites. You know, hi, how are you? I'm fine. There isn't a
well,
real
that's actually,
conversation.
That's actually more than you get out of a lot of kids. Karen, I love your point. But you listen to some of the conversation, and it's like, yeah, uh-huh, so... hi, how you doing is more than I actually hear from a lot. But boy, is your point important, Karen. I think that's really, really important. And I go back to the fact that if parents are not making their kids talk about things other than themselves, we're really lacking something. And just seeing that one point, you know, every once in a while, something just hits you. And I'll admit to you, Karen, this really hit me. The fact that the average kid only talks to his parents about himself. I mean, when you think about it, that's an entire universe of change in what it means to be human. Parents need to be drawing, you're really implying this and very clearly so, need to be saying to kids, look, I want you to talk about this. What do you think about this? Here's something that happened in the news. Here's something that happened down the street. What do you think about this? How are you doing? What's happening in school? What did your teacher say about this? What are your friends saying about this? You know, something other than, did you have a good day? Yeah. What happened? Nothing. Are you doing okay? Okay. You got to get past that. And we're raising, and I guarantee you, especially with young males, because here's Mueller's theory of the gender difference in this. Girls will learn to talk. They will teach each other to talk. Just listen to girls in a middle school cafeteria. They've got the art and science down. Just compare it to the boys. Boys will not teach each other how to talk. Now, they'll teach each other how to grunt. It takes parents to teach a boy how to talk. Karen, thank you so much for your call. And it's great to hear from Pittsburgh, Michigan as well. There's still time for you to join the conversation by calling 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And I want to go back to where I began today. And that was in the top segment, talking about those three news programs I recommended. And suggesting to you that if you can't catch them when they're live, and I hope you're in church so you won't, then you can catch them on a podcast. Not only that, but it's an economical way to do it. The podcasts are free, and you can even listen to them with an economical use of time. But I want to suggest something else. You need to be the Tim Russert, the Bob Schieffer, the George Stephanopoulos for your family. Parents, you need to be the host of a conversation with your own kids in which you turn to them and say, all right, what do you think about this? Okay, here's a news issue. How would you respond to this? And so just remember that as parents, we're not just there to observe what's going on. We are to parent. And that means we need to really be involved in the lives of our children and in the development of their worldviews. I mean, it's scary to think what your kids might be thinking, who might be shaping their thinking, who might be influencing and directing their thinking. Get it out of them. And so I'm going to suggest to you, again, you be the Bob Schieffer, the Tim Russert, the George Stephanopoulos. You put your own kids in the chair and turn to them, not as a hostile interrogator with a bald light bulb hanging from the ceiling, but as the authoritative host in order to say, hey, how are we going to think about this? What do you think about this? Okay, well, I heard what you said. Let's think about what that means. Let's draw this in. How would a lost person respond to this? How do you explain how this person responded to that? That's a very interesting conversation. It's a conversation lacking in most children's lives, most children and teenagers, young people. It's a conversation that's lacking at far too many family tables. Of course, where the table's missing, the conversation's even less likely to happen. I don't know. I think some families probably have their most important conversations now in the car, in a hurry, on the way somewhere, where they're actually in one place together until someone opens the door and jumps out. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Very quickly, I want to go to Richmond, Indiana, where Michael's on the line. Go ahead, Michael.
Dr. Mueller, I was listening to your debate about the dining room issue and wanted to share the story. We actually, my wife and I, were looking for a new house, and the real estate agent were listing our home, our rooms we wanted, asked why we wanted a dining room. And we thought that was amazing that she would even ask. Because we eat together as a family in a dining room at least twice a week, sometimes more if we can manage it. But we thought it was amazing that we actually got that question. Why do you want a dining room?
You know, that's amazing and yet not shocking, Michael. And I just wonder how long it had been since that particular agent had been told by a customer, we want a dining room. That tells us a whole lot. Well, I'm thankful, by the way, for your very important testimony here, the fact that you and your family get together at least two or three times a week in a dining room for a meal, more if you can do it. I just think that's really important. And, you know, I can't do a program like this without expressing appreciation to my wife, Mary, for what she does in making sure that our family has regular meals together that she prepares. Because it's easy for me to say, boy, the family meal is really important. But if the family meal were up to me, we wouldn't be eating very well. But we eat wonderfully because she is. And, you know, it's just really important. As I think about my own mother, Mary's mother. I mean, you know, you're dealing with generations that just assume that was a part of what it was about. And then that's how a lot of love was shown and is shown. I think that's really, really important. And, you know, I really think about my own daughter. I think she will continue that because I think she'll look back and see it was really important. But will there be a dining room in the home? Who knows? You know, I think it just says a whole lot about us that we've gone from dining room to grazing ground. And that's actually the terminology being talked about by people who are selling and manufacturing and designing houses. Our architecture does say something about us, and certainly our homes say something about us. We have turned, what used to be conversation space into watching and viewing space. We now want to be entertained rather than have to entertain each other in conversation. We have lost the ability to have a conversation about the most important issues of the day. And we've lost an awful lot of the fine art of conversation that just takes place when people are in a room with nothing else to entertain them. Now, that's something that the average kid, the average child, teenager, young adult has probably never experienced. And, just maybe tonight you need to turn the tables, no pun intended, and make sure that it happens. Thanks for our callers today. Great conversation. This is one of those issues that just hits you and you say, you know, we need to talk about that. I'm glad we did. And we'll pick up similar issues as we find out what not only our houses, but so much of the rest of our lives do say about us and our families. Tomorrow we're going to have Jim Wallace. He's going to be talking about his new book, The Great Awakening. He and I, we don't see eye to eye on a lot of this, but we're going to have a great conversation. And it's about the future of evangelicalism, and I'm looking forward to it. I am here in Dallas, Texas. I'll be delivering the Griffith Thomas Lectures in Theology tomorrow at Dallas Theological Seminary the remainder of this week. We'll also meet with you for Intelligent Christian Conversation.
Be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.